Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the Kia Exceed plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551, please, please, please remember to wash your hands every time you hear that number, indeed every time you feel the need to wash your hands. And even if you know the number of times you've washed your hands today, you haven't washed them enough. Maureen Lawler, Maureen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You're in Selbridge in County Clare. Why have you, in County Kildare, have you contacted us?
Well, at the end of yesterday's programme, I only got the end of it, you were talking to a lady about vaccination programme.
Yeah.
And I know you asked her a question about whether a doctor could opt out of the scheme, and she didn't actually answer the question in full. So my question was, can a doctor opt out of the vaccination programme? And if he so does want to do this, should he advise his patients of his decision and direct them to where they could get vaccinated, and maybe even give them a telephone number? Because the doctor here, one of the doctors here in Selbridge, is refusing to give the vaccination to anybody. His question was to an elderly couple that went to him on Monday, and I live in a complex where there's a lot of elderly people. Was that he wouldn't put a vaccination in an arm that he wouldn't put in his own arm. So he obviously feels strongly about the vaccine. What would worry me then with these people here, and I'm speaking on behalf of about five or six of them that I know are registered with this particular doctor, and now they don't know where to go because he's refusing to administer the injection. And I would worry that if an elderly person actually fears that their own doctor, who they may have been with for years and trusted the doctor, that they may feel that, well, should I be questioning this? Should I really receive the vaccine? Because they could go home and make a different decision, and maybe it could affect their life and other people around them. So my question was, can a doctor do this and give such, you know, bad vibes?
And did this doctor, by the way, the doctor is Dr. Gerard Waters in the Whitehorn Clinic in Selbridge, County Kildare, because we've spoken to him, and hopefully we'll be able to speak to him on air if he wishes, but so far he doesn't. But he's told us his position, which I'll read out now in a sec. But you say your friends were told, I will not put this vaccine, this is the doctor, I will not put this vaccine into any person's arm that I won't put into my own arm.
That's
but
correct.
Did he follow up by saying, however, there is Dr. Mary Murphy, for argument's sake, down the road, and she will look after my patients who want the vaccine?
Not at all. That was the whole problem when they questioned, well, if you won't do it, can't do it, and don't want to do it, where can we go? Mm-hmm. And the answer was, I don't know, you'll have to find out yourselves. So the couple in question did ring the HSE afterwards, and they tried to get information. The lady was quite helpful. But she said they hadn't come across this before, and that she would have to speak to her supervisor, and that she would come back to them. Now, she hasn't come back yet. So I know there's a few in the building I'm in. I'm in a sheltered housing complex in Selbridge. So there's age groups from late 60s to late 80s. And we've all been very good for the whole year. Although we're independent living, we live in our own apartment, look after ourselves. But at the same time, we've all been extremely careful. And now they really want to jump with joy to think that next week the over 85s were getting their injection. And here we have a situation where they're not only not getting it from their GP, but they don't know where to go, and they've not been informed. And when you get a bit older, you know, sometimes this information can be damaging.
And other information can be hard to come by
as well.
Now, we got on to the IMO, the Irish Medical Organisation. They gave us a long statement, but basically say we have not been aware of any GP who is not participating in the programme. We got on to the Irish College of General Practitioners, and they said the same. We are not aware of any GP who has declined to participate in vaccinating the over 70s. Well, now we know one, at least, Dr. Waters in Selbridge. Now, do you know from your talking to your people in the Thursday Club in Selbridge, do you know if he referred anyone for COVID tests over the last year?
Not as far as I know, he hasn't. No, and maybe nobody has been to him because so far in this complex we've been okay and nobody had any symptoms. We do have a scheme coordinator, and if we had symptoms, we would have gone to her, and she would have directed us immediately to a doctor or to get a test.
Well, just in fairness to Dr. Waters, and we spoke to him, Rebecca, me and our series producer spoke to him this morning a number of times, and very civil man, very, very, very personable. But this, and we invited him on the programme, obviously, because we've had your representing a number of people. He did confirm that he's not going to give the vaccine. He is, in his own words, a conscientious objector. He will not be administering the COVID-19 vaccines. He said he will not stand in the way of his patients getting the vaccine elsewhere, but he said it's now up to the HSE to sort vaccines for these patients. And if needed, he will pass on his patient list. He openly took your point where we put what you said. He tells patients that he wouldn't put anything into their arms that he wouldn't put into his own. He has not referred. He does not refer his patients for COVID tests. He does not refer his patients for COVID tests and disagrees with how the COVID virus has been handled by the authorities. He says he is not fixed in his views. If circumstances change, I will change. But he's not willing to administer what he calls an experimental messenger RNA virus vaccine. And he was keen. And we're keen to hear him as well, because it sounds like it's a rare occurrence, but when it does happen, as you say, especially given on one day in January, 101 people died. One day in the month of January, over 1,000 people died.
It's incredible, Joe, that this doctor, he's a medical doctor, he's supposed to be saving lives. That's what he took his oath for. And for these older people that have been waiting so long for the injection, but nobody has been informed by him. If he was making this decision, this isn't just happened now. I mean, he obviously had these feelings in the early days.
Well,
he should have been informed.
It's 11 months ago now since the pandemic arrived in with a vengeance. And he says he does not refer, I presume he has not referred anyone, any of his patients for COVID tests. But does that mean that if someone came in saying, I have the headache, I have the sore throat, I have that awful cough, can't you hear it, doctor?
Well, and I wonder, has anybody telephoned him to say that and had a virtual phone call with him? Because the people here I know haven't. So I don't know if anybody else in Selbridge who's registered with him has done that and said, and he said, well, I can't refer you. I find it extraordinary that a doctor in this day and age, and all the doctors are so anxious to get it into our arms, and here we have a doctor who doesn't want to do that. It's incredible, really. He has his own reasons, but I just can't comprehend his reasons at all.
Now, I know in the UK, because we were looking up, by the way, we were onto the HSE when you first contacted us, which is nearly 2 days ago now, Maureen, because we were going through the hoops on this. We've been onto the HSE when you first contacted us, which is over 24 hours ago. Our question went in. And to ask the HSE this exact question, are they aware of any GP is refusing to give the vaccine when the vaccine arrive in enough doses? And they haven't replied as of yet. So we don't know what their position is.
Well, the position when the lady on Monday rang the HSE, the girl was totally taken aback. She was shocked to hear that this lady was saying, my doctor won't give it to me. What do I do? And she said, it's the first time I've heard it. She said, I'll have to speak to my supervisor. She had no idea what she should do.
But the other element as well is not that my doctor will not give it to me, but he will not refer me to another GP who will. Because in this day and age in Ireland, as we all know from years and years of calls on Liveline in terms of medical care, if you ring a strange doctor in the objective use of that word, that doctor will say to you, who is your GP?
course they
And you
will.
Give your name. My GP is Dr. George Waters in Selbridge. And they say, well, go to him. And you say, well, he doesn't administer it. What is that GP? Him or her are up to their eyes, as we know. What do they then say? Oh, hang on, I'll ring that doctor and get permission to move over your file in case there might be something in your file.
Well, that's exactly it, Joe. That's what they were. Some of them already knew of his feelings on the matter because they had been to him during the year with other problems, and he'd said to them, "When it comes, I'm not administering it." But being elderly, and some of them have conditions, they didn't do anything else about it until it's actually come to the point where it's to be administered, and they all want it now. And what he didn't do was say, I don't want it, I'm not doing it, but I will refer you to another doctor, or I'll refer you to an area where they've set up a whole venue of vaccinations, and I'll even ring and put you on a list, even if he was helpful in that way. It would have helped these people, but just to give a blank no, and no information as where they would go, I just think it's an appalling abuse of his position.
I presume the people you've been talking to, Maureen, they all want the vaccine.
Absolutely.
The sense I'm getting from this programme, and I know people don't, people in authority don't like to hear it, but there is, the fact of the matter is, we do watch British TV and radio and newspapers.
Yes.
We do see that Nicola Sturgeon this morning announced 1 million people in Scotland, similar population to the island of Ireland, but 1 million people in Scotland. Actually, no, it's similar population out to the Republic of Ireland after the last census. They've got the vaccine, the first dose of the vaccine. Where here it's 150,000. People are really, really getting concerned about, and especially as they're hearing the lockdown will go on. September now, we're told, by the time enough people in Ireland will get the vaccine. Pascal Donoghue was on a different station this morning, the Minister of Finance, and he was saying, no, we won't break ranks with the EU. We're with the EU, and even though other EU countries, including Germany and Hungary and the Eastern European ones, have broken ranks, and he says, no, we will not break ranks. And that means we're going to get our proportion of whatever comes in, which so far has been 1.1%.
It's very small, and we're all anxious to get it, and we're
after
living
a year.
We're living day to day, and we've been living in this complex, and we're lucky enough to have a huge garden where we were able to go out in the summertime, but the wintertime now up to Christmas has been horrendous for them. And now to know that they can't even get the vaccine, that they've got to go through a different situation, a different program even, I just can't understand a GP not wanting to give it to other people, even if he does object to it himself.
Yeah, but he uses the phrase conscientious objector, which has in many ways honourable resonance with world wars and wars against where people are being told to go out and, whether, I know there's complexity, but shoot other people.
I know.
But so he's basically saying, like, there was conscientious objectors to people fighting against the Nazis.
There was.
But this isn't an evil.
I can't relate to it, to this situation. This is keeping people alive and helping people live the rest of their lives. Let's face it, when you get over 80, you don't know how long you've got. We've already had to lose at least a year of our lives here, or anybody who's in their late 80s and early 90s. We can't afford to lose a day or a year of our life. Younger people, they are in a different position. They can afford to marry the course, but we can't because we just don't know.
And remember, I think it was the final call yesterday, it was from a nurse in a GP practice, and she said, we have all the information. We know everyone. We've already sorted out. Well, I presume it's a press of a button now with technology. We know everyone who's over 80. We know everyone who's aged between 70 and 80. We know everyone who's over 65. So the minute we get the details of the vaccine, we're able to press a button. And that everyone aged, say, to begin with, over 80, they will get the letter or the text, and then everyone. So, in other words, they are the holy grail in terms of
they
information.
Are. And we're all. The community is about 45 people, and we're registered with different doctors. We're not, because
that's
we all
fine,
came in individually.
Yeah.
So we are ringing our doctors and we are getting information, and they are sending out information as to when we will be vaccinated, because we're all different ages. But when it comes to this one next week, this is the first one now for the over 85s. Mm-hmm. And I know this couple that went to see Dr. Waters, they're not in good health. One of them isn't in good health. And it was important that they got the right information, and not only didn't get any, and they got a refusal. So I just didn't know if a doctor was able to do that. Could he actually, is that legally binding, that he can opt out to mm-hmm. not inject a patient? I mean, they do flus, don't they? Flu injection and pneumonia. So I don't know if he, because he's not my doctor, I don't know if he carries out those tasks as normal with the elderly people, or whether he's against all injections. I don't know. But that was my question.
Well, though, in fairness to Dr. Waters, the fact that your friends attend him, and it sounds like they've been attending him for a while, they regard him as a good doctor.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they, I think they're quite shocked of the whole situation, to be honest.
Okay.
And
remember the country, and when Frank and Una came on this programme this day last week, and they both bizarrely rang separately from Gran Canaria and talked about their position there.
Oh, yes, I heard it.
The country went mad, and the government brought in a Frank and Una fine. They've upped the fine from 500 quid because...
to 2,000.
To 2,000. Yes. So yes, they moved quickly on poor Frank and Una. But what about GP?
What are they going to do with the doctor?
Okay, we'll find out.
Okay.
Maureen, what's it like? So you're living in a I don't want to name the complex, but you're living in a complex which is not a nursing home, obviously.
Oh, no. Oh,
okay.
We pay rent here like anybody else, and we live in our own apartment. We feed ourselves, cook for ourselves.
Great.
But we have a community, a communal area where we have different functions.
Right.
We have a committee that organises outings, so we're all quite close here.
Isn't that?
And we all get on very well.
Have you read The Thursday Murder Club by Richard Osman?
No, I was going to buy it and I couldn't get it.
Well, that's based, not in a nursing home, but it's based in exactly what you're describing.
Yeah.
And you the group, I don't know, do you play bridge or do you have a bridge night or a quiz night? Or
We have quiz nights,
yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well in this residential community is the best way of describing it. Richard Osman, you know him, he's off Countdown.
I do. Ryan Topperty interviewed him on the radio.
Did you? Okay.
And everybody went out and bought his book.
I read the book. I wasn't overly mad about it, but I read it. I've read much better thrillers. But anyway, but the funny thing is they meet every Thursday, as it happens, around this time, actually, in fictional world.
Yes.
And this is bizarre. Well, it's not really when you look at what people listen to in podcasts. They pick a murder, an unsolved murder.
Right.
And they go through it. And in their group, which I'm sure is not the same mixture, but in the group of these people who are living in this residential unit, they have an ex-pathologist and someone who was a policewoman and someone who was a journalist. And they mix together and It's a fantastic idea. There's going to be a TV series and more books out. Maybe you should set up.
I think they're making a film as well.
Yes, they are. The group that are the mainstay of the book from the residential centre, there's four or five of them. They're great characters and very different characters. And there'll be little bits of affection between different people, but there'll be little bits of animosity and
We've
jealousy.
Had that.
Have you got that?
I have that.
So you have the affection.
Everything,
yes.
And all the above.
And who's in charge?
Who's in charge here?
Yeah, who's the Kofi Annan? Who's in charge of peace?
We have a very wonderful scheme coordinator who keeps us in check Monday to Friday, and she joins in everything we do and is very supportive to us, and we can go to her with anything we want.
Magic,
and
okay.
She's absolutely wonderful.
You sound like a magnificent group of people.
We really are.
Yeah, isn't that fantastic? But anyway, it's still a serious issue, and as I say, Dr. Waters spoke to Rebecca a number of times this morning when she contacted us and told us, and he said, I'm a conscientious objector. I will not be administering the vaccine. I do not refer people for COVID tests. I will not put anything into someone else's arm that I would not put into my own arm as a doctor. If circumstances change, I will change, and I'm not willing to administer what he calls an experimental messenger RNA virus vaccine.
Why does he think it's experimental? Should the scientists have been working on it for the last 9 months and all over the world?
A million people in Scotland have got it alone.
Why would you doubt
it? 15 million people in the UK have got it. If there was a major issue, surely. Now, I know he might argue down to what about in 10 years' time or the children or whatever, but...
Well, I know they have to work on another one because the virus is changing all the time. But look, it's worked so far for all these people of the vaccination. Yeah. And it's our only hope of getting back to any kind of normality. And let's face it, we need it very badly here because all our social functions were cancelled. We can't use the room. We can't do anything until we get injected anyway, till we get the vaccination. Yeah. So I was curious. I've never heard of a doctor refusing a thing like this. He has, obviously, he's a conscientious objector, and he has his own, his own feelings. I suppose he's entitled to that. But okay. When it comes to the patient, that's a different kettle of fish. That's his own personal thing. I can't see how he couldn't forward the patient, even if he couldn't do it himself because he didn't believe in it. He could forward them to another doctor in the area.
But what does a conscientious objector mean in these circumstances?
Well, not in the...
It's not related to this vaccine,
that's for sure.
Okay.
I don't think so, anyway. Okay. And I'm only speaking for the people here.
Okay, that's Maureen Lawler in Selbridge. Maureen, do you know, by the way, if the other brilliant GPs in Selbridge, do they know that there's one GP who won't?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I have my own GP, which is a Dr. O'Connor, and she's brilliant. Okay. And there's a good few scattered around. We have a primary healthcare centre where there's a couple of GPs there.
Okay.
And as far as I know from speaking to other people here in the house, they're all quite happy with their doctor.
He's the only one that's that's not administering the vaccine.
And he's
totally upfront about it.
Yes, he is. I mean, I suppose he is entitled to have his own feelings, but when it affects another older person that he's refusing to do that, well, he'll say, well, you can get it somewhere else.
In the world we now live in, where people who go on holidays to Gran Canaria, Francanuna again, where they're told and vilified left, right and centre for going... and they were lovely people, as you heard them.
I did hear them,
gobsmacked by the reaction on and off the programme afterwards.
Yes.
And then the government changed the law over the weekend. Mm. The Francanuna fine went up to $2,000. If they're told you can't go on holidays, then the government will legislate. And if you don't pay the fine, if you don't pay a fine in Ireland, the ultimate end to not paying a fine is ending up in prison. There's no stipulation.
Yes.
Surely we could do something about this. Maeve Warren. Maeve, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How's it going?
You're a nurse.
I am.
As I say, the College of General Practitioners and the IMO, I think they both of them cover, I know there's competition between them as we discover, but there's both of them... In a nice way. But both of them, I think, cover most GPs. They say they are unaware of anyone who has objected, but we now know, and he's told us clearly, Dr. Gerard Waters does. As a nurse, have you ever heard anything like this before?
Never. I'd be more than 20 years having worked in general practice. It's just disgraceful. The governing body that governs this GP may need to have a serious look at what's going on. I would have be of the opinion that he has a duty of care to his patients. No matter what we think as clinicians, we have a duty of care to provide care to them. And, you know, having worked with the most amazing general practitioners for the past 20 years, this is just outrageous. It cannot be allowed to happen. These patients cannot be left with this.
Have you ever heard it before, say, with the flu jab? Or...
Never. Yeah. No, never, ever. Okay. I've never heard of this. And it's just not acceptable that he is allowed to do this. And to not make referrals for patients who may be coming in, like he's putting pressure on other surgeries around him. He's creating problems there. And there's, you know, if a patient misbehaved on a GP list, you know, the governing body would be onto them and talk to them. This is a GP who's, in my book, just my personal opinion, he's not providing care to his patients.
And just as
it's
a nurse,
not acceptable.
Given where this started, as a nurse, Maeve, what's the vaccine situation where you are?
Yeah, I'm actually in home care now, so okay. It's pretty serious, you know. We're going into people's houses, yeah. Unvaccinated. We're really worried. Our families are worried. My own father died in April. You know, 10 people at a funeral. It's really serious, yeah. and we need everybody vaccinated as quick ASAP. As possible. You yeah. know, we're all working so yeah. hard, okay. and to hear this today, it's very disheartening, and it's not acceptable in my book. It's just okay. not.
I'm glad you said that. I'm raging. That's quite right. It's not acceptable, and there's no duty of care. You're right.
There is no duty of care.
No.
Okay. Nothing personal to the GP concerned, but he has a duty of care in my book. Okay. To vaccinate these patients.
Maeve,
it is not acceptable. We are working so hard.
I can hear that, Maeve. I can hear that in your voice. And it's a year now since this pandemic hit us like a bus. And Maeve, you mind yourself and thank you for all the work you do.
That's Cheers, Maeve Joe. Warren. And thanks for everything you're doing. And good luck to everybody.
Thank you. That's Maeve Warren. And Maureen Lawler, thank you both. 51551. Please wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. I mentioned there on one day in January, 101 people died. Fiona Harrison has contacted us and is on WhatsApp. Fiona, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
And thanks for contacting us. And one of the things you do say, which is so striking in your contact, is about that day I now see, 101. That 101 mm-hmm. day. And you say, my mother was 101. One
exactly,
of those people.
Yeah.
We don't know who the other 100
yeah.
people were. And you
no,
want
we
to,
don't.
You want to put names on numbers. Tell us about your mother.
Yeah. My mom, she was 81 there on the 30th of January. Back in 2019, the end of September, she had a stroke. Mm-hmm. Following week, she had a bleed on the brain, which she developed aphasia from it. So she could only really communicate by saying yes. And yes meant yes, yes meant okay. no, yes mean Joe, you're a lovely guy, you know. But mm-hmm. we learned how to communicate with her. She'd blow kisses to say thank you, blow kisses to say hello, goodbye, whatever. Okay. But she was just a lovely, smiley, jolly, happy woman. Just as the virus broke out, we moved her to a nursing home. Not knowing what was around the corner. So that was in March. Then the nursing home was closed to visitation, which we thought would only last for a couple of weeks. Yeah. We never thought it would last this long. She was grand. They looked after her. It was fine. We thought, yeah, we can still go to the window. Happy days, whatever. Now, my dad was living at home at the time. He would drive up every day, possibly twice a day. He'd sit out the window and he would talk to her. They were together for quite a lot of years. They would have been together 64 years. And today they would have been married 58 years. Yeah. Now, unfortunately, at the end of March, my dad fell down the stairs and he broke his neck, which left him in hospital then for quite a number of months. He ended up in Dunleary Rehabilitation. They did great work with him and he has gained back some of his mobility. Mm-hmm. But in December of this year, he decided to forgo some of his physiotherapy for to spend whatever time he had left with my mom, given their boat in their 80s, like mm-hmm. that whatever time they had left, that they would just, he wanted to just spend whatever time he had with her, regardless of how he was. So after a lot of planning, we got him to the same nursing facility as okay. she was in. And he had to isolate for 14 days because he was coming from from a hospital to there to protect everybody else. Mm. During the 14 days, my mom happened to get sick and she developed blood clots on her lungs.
Okay.
So she had to be hospitalized and we were like, the hospital was very good. They understood that if she wasn't back out within 12 hours, she would have to isolate for 14 days. But unfortunately, they had to admit her to the hospital. So they were still aware of the 14 day isolation and the whole point of getting the two of them together for Christmas Day, because that's what he wanted. He was thinking like, this is going to be our last Christmas. And especially with everything had gone wrong, we had quite a lot of bad luck. And he was like, look, if this is the last Christmas, I just want to spend it with her. I don't care. So we said, right, we'll try and make this happen. So the hospital agreed to discharge mom back into the care of the nursing facility for that they would actually do the treatment, like the OBS, the medication and so on. So that she could come out of isolation after 14 days. They got back together on Christmas morning. They've seen each other a few times after this. And then on the 10th and the 11th of January this year, we noticed that Mam wasn't her usual bubbly, happy, smiley self. Okay. And no matter what was wrong with her, after two strokes, she still smiled and laughed and joked.
Incredible.
She was a fighter. She was just one in a million. I have to, I'm not just saying that because she's my mother. There's nobody I know could say a bad word about her. Everybody says that they're so sorry because she has had the most infectious laugh and the lovely smile. She saw the good in everybody. She was so non-judgmental. She was just absolutely amazing. I could be here all day with the words to describe her. But anyway, we noticed a change in her. And on the Wednesday, she had developed quite a high temperature. She wasn't eating. She was sleeping quite a lot. And they tested her for COVID. We were like, there's no way this could happen. Yeah. We haven't been near her. She's on her own in a room. Maybe it's a chest infection. And then you're thinking, maybe she has a flu, but then she got the flu jab. You're thinking of all the ifs, buts and maybes. Anyway, on the Thursday, our world was just turned upside down in ways we could never have envisaged. She tested positive and she had to be rushed to hospital. So we went. Now, my dad was already in the hospital that day for something completely different. He was unaware my mom was sick, unaware she was being tested, because we said, look, we're not telling him. We're just, we don't want to tell him until there's something to worry about. Yeah. Bearing in mind, the man is practically paralyzed. He's sitting in his room all day with his own thoughts. He'd be thinking of so many different things and there's nothing he could do because he's stuck in his room. So we said, look, we'll do all the worrying. We'll sort out whatever. So we made a decision anyway to let her go to the hospital. But then my dad was already there. So we got to the hospital. We asked if we could go in to talk to my dad. They said no. So he was in the hospitals. Well, I know in this particular hospital, you're put into what they call a COVID ward. So you're COVID until you're proven otherwise, and they test you. And then if you're non-COVID, you're moved off somewhere else. But if you're COVID, you're moved somewhere else again. So it's a process of elimination, which is fine because they have to protect themselves. But my dad, who had broke his neck, was seriously vulnerable, was now exposed to COVID in ways he never envisaged. He had no idea about my mom. So they said, no, you can't come in. So they said, he has tested negative. So I said, all right, that's grand. So I'm standing outside the hospital with my family. And we know that the ambulance is on their way for to bring my mom to the hospital. So he's like, well, where are you? And we're like, well, we're outside. And all he could hear in the background is, please make way for emergency vehicles. And I'm like, oh, please stop. Stop the sounds. Just want to tell him. So he was going on and on. I said, look, Dad, I have something to tell you. Mom has tested positive and she's on her way here. So he hadn't seen her. So we were like, how are we, like, to tell someone of 81 years of age by FaceTime, and he's on his own in a hospital. He couldn't get up and walk out. We had to tell him that she was positive. Then we had to tell him that she was on her way there, that she needed medical treatment. So we got through that. Then Mom started to get worse day by day. We had good days, we had bad days, but you could see they introduced all different sorts of treatment. They kept it up to date as much as they possibly could do. I can't praise the hospital staff enough. They were so caring and compassionate and so just so, so nice and understanding. Like, my mom still was still able to use FaceTime. So we dropped a phone down to her just so she could see a face on the other end. And if she got panicky, we could sort of reassure her. But the calls got less and less as the time went on. And if you've ever read someone who's documented COVID, you sort of see a pattern arising. And she used to call, say, 10, 15 times a day on FaceTime just to see a face. But these calls started to get to 3 and 4. Then on the Monday, we noticed that she had decreased a little bit, not hugely enough to notice, but we noticed it had gone down. The Tuesday was a little bit more. And on the Wednesday, I got this horrible feeling and I FaceTimed her and she answered and she just cried and I knew something was wrong. And I said, you know, I'm going to call you back in a few minutes. I'm just going to go somewhere. And I was on my way to the church just to say a prayer with her. And I rang her back when I got to the church and the doctor answered her FaceTime. And then I knew this was just serious. So he said, do you mind if I call you back in an hour? And I said, no, no problem at all. I had hoped it wasn't going where we thought it was going, but unfortunately it did. So they said they had to move her into a room on her own into isolation for to try and give her further treatment. Now, they said they wouldn't ventilate because obviously her age, her history, and we understood that it was something we had discussed and agreed upon before this had happened. Like, if it was going to be too invasive, don't do it. It's, she's been through enough. Yeah. But on the 2nd, on the 30th of January, it was her birthday. And they FaceTimed us to say happy birthday to her. And that was grand. She was in great form, still struggling in ways you could never envisage. We can't unsee what we've seen, but we were just so happy to see her because it was her birthday. And we put the phone down, and half an hour later, we got a call to say, yes, we can come to the hospital to see her. So we were like, God, this is great. They're very good letting us see her on her birthday. And then I was like, but should they not letting anybody into the hospitals unless it's compassionate grounds? And my sister was like, stop, don't be looking a gift horse in the mouth. It'd probably be all right. So myself and my son went down to the hospital, and within an hour, or say half an hour to an hour, when the doctors came down to just say she wasn't responding to any treatment. They've tried everything, and unfortunately had to commence palliative care. So we had to FaceTime my dad. He thought he was going to be saying happy birthday to her. Unfortunately, he was actually saying goodbye to her. So we told him what was happening. They started the palliative care. The hospital allowed us to stay, and there was somebody with her all the time from the time we were able to get in until the time she passed. Then on the Tuesday morning, unfortunately, my mom passed away. And again, we had to tell my mom my dad over FaceTime that my mother had passed away. It's horrible to see this. But then I hear people going, oh, shit, the numbers are great today. And I'm like, no, they're not numbers. My mother was one of those numbers. On that day, there was 101 people passed away, 100 people, and our mother passed away. Wow. Like, she's not a statistic. It's not numbers. I remember last year, back in March, when the first person passed away, uh-huh. It was like, oh my God. Then it went to 10 people, and you're like, Jesus, 10 people passed away. Now we were at 101, and people aren't even thinking twice about it. Like, there's people behind these, there's family members, like, there's people that have, they've names, they've faces, they've identities, they've history, personalities, they've so much more. But somehow they've just managed to become a statistic on a daily basis of a ping on someone's phone. And what I would like to do would be to put a name to all these statistical figures so that people can see the reality behind their alerts, as you get your RTE alert in the evening with how many cases of people who have passed away, and the numbers, and as people call it, they're not numbers, they're people. It's, my mother was one of them. Our mother was one of those. Like, she's so much more than a number. So that's what I've set up a Facebook page called C19, Remember Those We Lost. Okay. And what I would like to do, in conjunction with Care Champions, Care Champions are actually going to put a video together on the 6th of March, just as kind of like, it'll be a year from the day that all the nursing facilities closed. And we just want to put up something just to show the faces of all of the people that have passed away over this year, because like, grief is grief, whether they're in the nursing facility or in the hospital. You know, people have passed away. 10 people at a funeral. You can't grieve the way you're meant. Like, the church my mother went to had a capacity of 600 people. We could have had 10 people inside and 300 outside. And it's so wrong.
And in normal times, I suspect, from what you're saying, Fiona, that church would have been bursting with friends.
It would have been jammers. Yeah. Yeah, there was 1,000 people watching it online.
Yeah.
And then when we went to the crematorium, we found that part quite hard, because it was just hearse after hearse pulling up like a conveyor belt.
Apparently, the allocation is 20 minutes at a crematorium.
20 minutes, you have 20 minutes, that's it. And you're sitting there and you're nearly watching the clock.
And apparently, it's so fast, it's so busy, Fiona, that they just...
Blink your eye, it's gone.
That you could turn on the camera now to, I think it's Newlands Cross Crematorium, you can turn on the camera now and the camera's always on.
Yeah.
The camera's on because there's always a funeral.
There's always someone,
And as you say, my mother, a face, a name, an identity, a history, a personality, a smile, a family, and so much more.
Yeah.
But somehow they've become part of a statistical daily event. Now, I know the Irish Times, to their great, great credit, right at the outset began a Lost Lives collation, which I just know from doing the book I did on the children killed in the Troubles, and the children killed in Israel, that it's a mammoth task, and you have to be accurate and you have to be get everything right because you're dealing with people who've passed. So I know the Irish Times are still, that's still ongoing, and I think it's an incredible public service commitment on their part. But you, you want to set up a Facebook and people can then contact you on Remember Those We Lost, C19 Remember Those We Lost.
Yeah, and if people want to send a photograph to those we lost to c19@gmail.com and just put it like in the name, the date they passed away, a brief description, so that people can actually see that these are people and their family members, and just put a face to it, so they've somewhere to go, because you can't have a funeral. There's nowhere you can go for to see people who are actually experiencing exactly the same as you. And I know people say to you, "Oh, I'm sorry for your loss," and stuff, and they do mean it wholeheartedly. I know they mean it.
They do,
but
yeah,
if you've seen what we've, only people that have seen what we've seen can understand what we've been through, and it's such heartache that you can't even grieve in a normal process, and there's nowhere to go. I can't go to the graves, or like if I go to Glasnevin, I get stopped in two checkpoints, and you have to keep saying it. I'm going to see my mom, I'm going to see my mom, she's in the cemetery. And when you say it out loud and you're driving, it's you sort of make it real, and you don't want it to be real. Like, and it, but it is, that's the reality of it. It is real, but you don't want to have to keep stopping at checkpoints and explaining why.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the photograph of your mum that you sent in, with her mobile phone in her hand.
Yeah.
And her massive smile. What a, and her, not just her smile, her smiling face.
Yeah.
It's a face that's smiling, just, yeah.
Yeah.
And 58
so
years ago today.
58 years ago today they got married.
And
yeah.
And how is your dad, by the way?
He's coping. He's in the same nursing home as mum was in, and even at the funeral, like I should say, funeral wasn't a burial, it was a cremation. Mm. And he had to go, like we had a coffee outside Glasnevin Memorial.
Yeah.
And then he had to go back to the nursing home. We couldn't even spend time. You couldn't even hug him.
Yeah.
So he's quite lost. We had to pick a coffin over WhatsApp. We had to organise a funeral over FaceTime. And you want him to be part of it, but he's in there and he feels like there's nothing he can do. And you don't want to take control because it's his wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's, but he's lost. You see, like the light went out of his eyes the day she died. Now, he was able to get to the hospital to say goodbye, which we thought was important for him. So he saw her, he saw where she was, he saw the people that was around who looked after her. And it, hopefully it gave him a little bit of closure or help to sort of understand. But if he hadn't have been there, he, like, we had stage 1 to 10 of mom from the start to finish. He was jumping in at stage 1 where he saw mom looking great.
Yeah.
Then stage 4 where she's not so great.
Yeah.
And then stage 9 where she's about to go. And, you know, it's not the normal process. He took his vows quite seriously, like in sickness and in health. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't there in her sickness. And that's hard.
I'm very conscious today and that your mother has passed. And as you say, on the 2nd of February, 101, and I was saying in the month of January, it's well over 1,000. And that's why I was getting, I know people, some people look at me wrong, I was getting annoyed at some ads at the minute which are saying, oh, it's been a rough winter. It's been a horrific winter. Or a tough winter. It hasn't been a rough winter. It's been a horrific winter because all those people are names, family, smiles, friends, history. 58 years
for
ago
everything.
In a church, I don't know, in Dublin or whatever, your mum and dad were married. By the way, do you know where they met? Do you know where Michael and Dolores actually met?
Yeah, they were both originally from Cabra.
Okay.
And my mum was working in a shop. And my dad went in to get a packet of cigarettes.
Okay.
And he met my mom there, but she was also the brother of somebody he knew. And then
things just went
from there. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Oh, yeah. So sad.
Yep.
So sad. But I say that photograph, if you should, it's a little consolation to you, but just it reminds people. You've described her brilliantly, but I don't think how brilliantly you would describe her, Fiona, can do justice to that photograph for some reason. And I see another photograph of her, not just with her mobile phone, but is that a Fitbit she has on at one stage?
Possibly, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, God rest her, Fiona.
The phone was never far out of her hands. It really wasn't.
And condolences to Michael and the rest of the family.
Thank you.
Dolores Harrison would have been 58 years married today. And she died on the 2nd of February. And she was one of 101 people who died of this awful, awful virus that we just have to beat on that day and take even more seriously, if that's possible, than the seriousness. But still, there are still issues to be dealt with. Fiona, you take...
3,794 people have passed away from this. And I'd say if people know 10 faces at this stage, that's all they know.
Yeah.
Which is wrong.
Okay, Fiona, go safely, and thanks indeed, and God rest Dolores, and may she rest in
Take
peace,
care
safe in the arms of Our Lady Queen of Heaven.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Oh, at RT.ie, Mary Kearse. Mary, good afternoon. I know you're frontline healthcare workers, back to vaccines again, and you work for Home and Said in Ennis. What situation have you found yourself in, Mary, about the vaccine?
Good afternoon, Joe, and thank you for having me on. Yeah. I'm working with Home Instead, and about 5 or 6 weeks ago, the HSE asked us to give in our names for registration for the vaccine.
Okay.
And then just this week, we registered with them for the vaccine. But as I'm one of the older workers, I'm over 70, I'm nearly 75 next month. I couldn't have the normal vaccine that the younger workers had. So I contacted my manager, and she said because we've registered with the HSE that I would have to contact my GP, as it was out of her hands.
Mm-hmm.
So I contacted my GP, and I contacted his secretary, and she said that it would be 2 to 3 months as they were starting with the over 85s.
Okay.
Now, I would be group two, so I asked her what happens with the frontline workers. Mm-hmm. I'm working with vulnerable clients, and I'm vulnerable myself as well. And so she said there weren't, it was the over 85s and then back to the 80s and 70s and so forth. Yeah. So, I'm left in a dilemma in between two stools, in that I don't know where to go for a vaccine, you know.
And what about, would you be caught in this gap now where people over 65, even if the AstraZeneca is available, won't be getting it in Ireland?
That's right. We're not suitable for it.
Well, WHO disagree, and the UK medicine regulator disagrees.
Yes. Well, my daughter contacted Dr. Tom Barris yesterday, and he informed her that I was not to be given AstraZeneca. So that leaves me out, because when the vaccination occurs with Home Instead, they would not have the vaccine suitable for me. And I can't get it from my GP for 2 to 3 months. And I'm really worried about going to my client, and I'm worried for myself as well. And, you know, the public health nurses are coming in. They're vaccinated for a while back now, and they're alarmed that we're still out in the community and we have no vaccine, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm now it is coming for Home Instead. We haven't got, there isn't an appointment yet.
Okay.
But I don't know where to go to get a suitable vaccine for me.
Now, we have, as it happens, we have a statement. I'll go to the end of the statement that refers to what you're asking from the HSE. It's a two-page statement about the question we put to them 24 hours ago about the doctor in Selbridge who's refusing. He said he's a conscientious objector and will not administer the vaccine, will not refer people on. He said he will release his list. I think he has to release his list. And he has never, does not refer people for COVID tests. The HSE say we've not been made aware of any GP who's not participating in the programme. Well, there's one name for you. Anyway, you've been listening to the programme, HSE. But they also say that the over 85s, that vaccination will commence. Now, this doesn't affect you, unfortunately, because you're 75. That will commence early next week, with GPs inviting those aged over 85 to come forward. Now, then, I'm going back to our caller at the start, Maureen, about the doctor in Selbridge. So bear with me for a sec, please, Mary, and I'll come back to your own particular dilemma falling between the different gaps. They say anyone who's, if the GP surgery is too small or whatever, the infrastructure or the building is too small, there's a clinic in Dublin and a clinic in Cork. It's in the Helix in the north side of Dublin, Glasnevin, Stroke, Ballymun, and CIT in Cork. But the thing is, our people who are, our GP who's saying no is in Selbridge. And to get from, first of all, it's outside your 5K. But too, it's an enormous distance, so it's a difficult one. Now, have you worked out? Of course, no one knows if you're told you're due the vaccine because of what you do, but you're too old for the vaccine that we have. And that's instead of saying, "Well, we give everyone should get a vaccine," let's go.
Well, that's what the message is, that frontlines, the most vulnerable people go first. And I'd be group two, but I seem to be falling into group three with the over 80s.
Okay. Yeah. Say with us, Mary. Joe at rt.ie, 1850-715-815. John Martin is in Limerick. Back to the vaccine. Go ahead, John.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thank you for taking my call. Well, I just like to say our own circumstances. My wife and I are in our 70s. My wife has two titanium valves in her heart. She's on our second pacemaker. She's also an asthmatic. And I've had prostate cancer. And my wife has been actually, she's only left the house once since March.
Yeah.
And that was to go and see her cardiologist. She's absolutely terrified. And her psychological... it's becoming more irrational now than rational, if you get my point of view, in relation to the virus, because it's just the whole idea of that she hasn't had communications with the outside world, only myself and my two great daughters who supply our shopping for us every week. And all I'd really ask and what I'd like to see happening is if the Minister for Health actually just came on the RTE News or came on and done a news bulletin and just actually told us what the plan is. Because there's so many mixed messages coming through.
But is that not part of the problem, John, that this virus is so unpredictable, now we variants, that they say God laughs at people who make plans. That you can't plan, you can't, because you can't predict.
Well, I totally accept that, Joe. The WHO last night said that the AstraZeneca vaccine perfectly safe for over 70s. Now I see a BBC bulletin put out, okay, that the South Africans are trying to get rid of 1.5 billion AstraZeneca vaccines because they won't administer it to it because they believe it's worthless against the South African
variant. Yeah,
you know.
And what are you saying? The Irish government should have swooped in and asked to buy
them. No. I mean, okay, if it's not good, because let's face it, I do believe that the South African variant is in the country already, and that would be just anecdotal evidence that I hear people talking about.
Well, the figures in Ireland as of a few minutes ago, it's gone off my screen now, is 154,000 have got the first dose and 80,000 have got the second dose. So that's a total of, well, it's still only 154,000 people have got the first dose. There's no point in adding up the two of them at this stage. Whereas in Scotland alone, as you know, it's over 1 million have got the first dose. But the HSE are saying that puts us third in Europe. Well, I presume, like GB, the United Kingdom is part of Europe. It's not part of an organisation called the EU, but it is part of Europe.
Of course,
our closest neighbour. We have a land border, same language, same media, same lots of the same influence, same football, blah, blah, etc. Teams people support. And they say, well, that puts us third in Europe, prepared, but that, I don't know if that butters any parsons for people. I know that's the reality. It puts us third in Europe in terms of doses per 100 of the population. Well, France is a complete cluster mess. Because they didn't even buy their own vaccine, they let the commission start wrangling with them over price, and the British government swooped in and bought the first, I think, 10 million of the vaccines from a French producer, and the French are going mad, and the French are sceptical about government anyway and the state, but they're sceptical about vaccines. So I don't know whether comparing ourselves to other members of the EU at this stage is would that reassure you, John? Like, well, we are third when you take out England out of Europe, the UK.
It's so much mixed messaging that's coming through, and from the WHO, from the EU, from our own Department of Health, and fundamentally, I'm making a statement to you. That's why I'm on the phone today. That if the minister or the Minister for Health, and after all, the buck stops with the Minister for Health, would just come and clearly state some of the facts. And if we don't know something, just state we don't know. Okay, and let's try and put people's minds at rest, okay, insofar as that if we have to wait, well, then so be it. And just let's get rid of the wrong information, as was put forward by a previous president of the United States, false information or fake news, okay? And let's get our minister to tell us, the citizens of Ireland, where we are in relation to
and
the
vaccination. And when you heard the Taoiseach this morning, and I don't know if you did, but you would have heard reports on Morning Ireland saying that Easter at the earliest at this rate, which is April, it's an early Easter this year, but still, can't come quick enough for a lot of people, I know. Easter schools more than likely now gone for, with the exception of exam classes limited and special needs from today. Thanks to everyone who sorted that out, and hopefully it would get bigger and bigger. But when you hear it's going on at least Easter, which means nearly over a year, and as you say, March, since your wife has been out apart from one medical appointment.
Yes.
How does that make you feel, John?
It makes me feel this an absolute despair. And all we need, and I have the complete and total sympathy for Leaving Cert students, for students, for the nation in general, and for elderly people, okay? This pandemic, and this is the pandemic is nobody's fault, but it's stealing a year from our lives, what little we have left of it. Please God, we'll have a good bit when this is over. But we don't know, and as time goes by, and all I'd like to know is from our minister, our government, is just some clarity on where we are, where things are. And if this, as I say, which is really kind of annoying me, is to say that the AstraZeneca, and you can check this on the BBC internet, okay, through the internet, you can check it. 1.5 billion.
Well, I heard one. Million. I heard a much smaller figure. But anyway, I heard it was over a million anyway. But
1.5 million AstraZeneca. They're up for grabs, anybody who wants to take them. So,
but you see, the point that the Minister Pascal Donoghue made this morning is if we break ranks on the vaccine, so to speak, which is, there's a strong, he said, if we break ranks, we'd be trampled on by everyone else getting in ahead of us. That we're such a small player. Though we were so brilliant with the world, we're always told it's the diaspora, the worldwide IDA, our embassies, second to none in the world in terms of this, rightly so, the skills of our diplomats, our literary tradition, our U2 contacts, our Bono ringing the Prime Minister of Japan and Prime Minister of other countries to help get PPE and paid for some of it as well themselves. That was an incredible effort. Now, should the same effort be, would we really be trampled on if we said we want to see can we get more vaccines because of the demographics of our population, the age breakdown or whatever? Okay, but that's the government position. There's no way they are breaking ranks with the EU at this stage. Okay, John Martin, Gura Míle Maith, John, kind regards to you and your wife. A very, very difficult time ongoing.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Joe, for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Thanks for making the call. And Mary Kearse as well. Thank you. And thank you for your service as well and everyone at home instead. 51551, please wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Mentioned at the start of the programme, Maureen Lawler mentioned the doctor in Selbridge, Dr. Waters, Dr. George Waters, who is a conscientious objector to the, he will not, as you said, put something into someone else's arm that he will not put into his own arm, and he's never referred anyone for a COVID test, and he didn't, according to our caller, and based on the number of people she was talking to, he did not give an alternative option for people who wanted a vaccine. Pat Morrissey is a GP in Limerick. Pat, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
And will you administer the vaccine?
No, I will not be administering the vaccine, but I want to clarify that I have many patients who are eager to receive the vaccine, and thankfully I have a practice big enough to facilitate looking after those patients. But I will be ensuring that patients are properly consented and that they will be as fully informed as possible about the possible risks of these experimental gene therapies.
And would you say in your practice, it's not that you're saying to people, no, I'm not giving you the vaccine, good luck. You're saying there's
other... I'm going to look after them, Joe.
Okay.
The narrative has been controlled quite tightly, and I appreciate you, your researchers contacting me about this. Because there are other alternatives to vaccination. There are effective therapeutics out there. Just ask yourself why the death rates in most of Africa and India are so small when cheap, repurposed drugs are available over the counter and they have no access to vaccines at the moment.
Well, one of the reasons when I was reading up about, I'm not getting into the ins and outs of it now because I don't have another medic on the line, but one of the reasons South Africa and indeed India is that people die much younger in those continents anyway, unfortunately.
No, Joe, that's disingenuous.
Okay, but
I can give you the data if you want it.
Okay, but I'm looking at every... From the FDA in the States to Dr. Anthony Fauci to the IMO to the Italian medical organization to every single one of them, without exception, Pat, without exception, is in favor of the vaccines. Now,
I'm not an anti-vaxxer, by the way. Provide the vaccines in my practice, and I'm actually involved in tropical and travel medicine.
And Pat, as you mentioned, you're in a practice with other medics. What do they think of your stance?
Well, our practice seems to be more broad-minded than the media and the government and the parliament that we have at the moment, because there's quite a broad range of opinion within my practice. There's a broad range among the population as well, but you wouldn't know that listening to the TV or the radio
Any surveys, that are done, Pat, opinion polls or various polls, focus groups or whatever, the ones I've been reading show that the population are in favour of even stricter suppression of it than the government.
Yeah, well, Joe, there's a reason for that. But it's because come the back population are being corralled down a particular road.
Okay, and you say people can be manipulated or whatever. That's your belief by the media.
Are they being told about the alternatives, Joe? Do they know about ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine? Do they?
Yes, it's been mentioned loads of times. But they
trust. Have you had doctors on who are in favour and who are prescribing? There was a show on the other night on the Irish Inquiry that your listeners could check out, and there was a Dr. Pierre Corey from New York speaking about ivermectin and the evidence.
Okay.
He's very well qualified.
And Pat, what do you face any sanction for refusing to give out?
Of course I do.
What is the sanction?
I'm a pariah among my colleagues.
What does that mean?
It means that I am outside the fold. I have been complained to the Medical Council for my prescribing habits.
Around COVID?
Yeah.
Around, okay. And
and just to put that in context, Joe, I'm sanctioned. No, no, just to, okay. just to answer the question.
No problem.
So I'm sanctioned for and complained about for prescribing something that is widely available over the counter in most of the world. Recently in Italy, the doctors, a large group of doctors there overturned the ban on prescribing hydroxychloroquine successfully. Okay, there's a country, there's countries around the world, including recently in the last week, Slovakia have sanctioned
ivermectin. But have you been sanctioned, Pat? I don't think you have, from what you're saying. You've been reported.
Reported, yeah.
Because to who? Okay. You're a member of which organization? The IMO.
I'm a member of the IMO. Well, yeah,
they told us nobody had refused.
I've lost paid positions that I was on for my views on these issues.
Okay, Dr. Lona Duffy is on the line, well-known GP up in Monaghan. Dr. Duffy, good afternoon. I don't know how much you've heard of Pat, but he says he's serious reservations about the vaccine. There are other over-the-counter cures or medicines available. Dr. Duffy.
So, more afternoon, everyone. Yeah. I'm kind of late coming into this. And Pat, I've heard you speak maybe before on this. And I suppose this is all a learning game. This is such a new disease. It's here with us a year. But we are aware that things are changing with regards to treatments, vaccinations, medicine at work, how this presents, how the virus has changed and how it's presenting. And I suppose all we can do, and me as a GP on the ground, and as someone who's actually been through COVID, is follow the guidelines and follow the evidence. And while the evidence changes as time goes on, we'll move with that evidence. And I mean, you're talking about the ivermectin and the data that's there. I suppose if the real data is there, it's going to be introduced as a treatment. And that's how I feel about it. And when I had COVID at the beginning, there were lots of treatments being mooted as helping. And really, afterwards, it was deemed that many of them were dangerous and increased, actually, death rates in patients because they caused arrhythmias, they caused other problems. So that's why...
What are you referring to specifically there, Ilona?
Oh, gosh, Pat, I'm kind of stuck for words at the moment.
Some aspersions on treatments. What are you referring to exactly?
Well, do you remember at the beginning there was talk about using azithromycin and Plaquenil? They were the two that at the beginning were used. And then Plaquenil was being heavily mooted as something that we should be using even in GP land in early stages in hospital. And the data, as we know, came back as time went on to say that, no, it increased cardiovascular risk in patients.
I think you might be referring to the reports in The Lancet in the New England Journal, which were subsequently discredited and retracted because they were using falsified data.
You're throwing up... You said, when I mentioned the African thing, you said you had a study. Yeah, I'm not forewarned about this. But what I do know, you're throwing in studies. You say reject Lona's view, Doctor.
Well, if your researchers get on to me later, I'll supply them.
Pat, I just want to ask you this question: do you believe there is a conspiracy among the FDA, Anthony Fauci, all the American, the Canadians, the?
It'd be nice for you to box me off like that.
No,
Joe,
I'm asking you. I'm just asking you.
I'm looking after my patients as best I can.
And I meant, do you know if many of your patients who you refuse to give the vaccine to go to other doctors?
I'm not refusing. Joe, you're putting words in my mouth now. Okay. I'm not refusing anything to anyone.
Oh, sorry. I'll take them back out. What are you doing?
I'm looking after my patients. I provide therapeutics
Have you given anyone the vaccine?
No, I haven't got the vaccine
When you get it, will you?
My practice, we will provide the vaccine
Will you?
Personally?
Now I go in and say, hey, Pat, great to see you again. Can I have the vaccine, please?
If you go through the consent form with me and you sign
it, then you can have it, Joe.
No problem.
Okay.
No problem. Once people are suitably informed.
Okay. And if I say to you, yes, Dr. Pat, I am happy that I'm suitably informed. I trust the FDA, I trust the EMA, I trust the Department of Health, I trust the HSE, I trust all the doctors I hear on the radio, I trust the IMO, I trust the Irish College of General Practitioners. You will have no hesitation in putting that jab into my arm.
My practice, we will have no problem.
No,
your body, your choice.
That's
not relevant. Can I provide a treatment for my patients?
Have you referred people for COVID tests, Pat?
I have, of course.
Okay. And would you have a view on the doctor that we spoke about earlier who refuses to refer people for COVID tests?
I'm not going to comment on Dr. Waters. I wasn't privy to the conversation that was had, earlier.
Okay. Thanks indeed, Dr. Pat Morrissey in Limerick. Stay safe, Pat. And Dr. Lona Duffy, stay safe. And thank you both for your service.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Oh, at rt.ie from anywhere in the world. Rebecca Meehan produced. And Ray Darcy is next.